south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. First, a little technical information before we start. Now, as you probably figured out, I usually record my shows a few days before they're broadcast here on PRN. And when I'm really buzzing around Latin America, sometimes I record them a week, 2 weeks, even a month before they go out. But no matter when they're recorded, they usually end up on www.expatwisdom.com. That's expatwisdom.com. A few days before they go out on PRN. And note, if you get the shows from expatwisdom.com, they're a bigger file and in high fidelity, if that means anything to you. And by the way, for those of you who pick up the show on podbean.com or Stitcher or other places, they're generally the last ones to get the show, usually a day or two later than PRN. And from the numbers at the expatwisdom.com website, it looks like quite a few of you go there to get the shows early. I guess a lot of people want to tune in early to see what kind of crap expat Eddie stepped into this time. Anyway, recently at the expatwisdom.com website, it looks like we've been bombarded with a high level of downloads from IP addresses from who knows, the Russians, the Chinese, the alphabet agencies. Not to mention the usual suspects, the mass spammers. You know, the ones that come from Nigeria and now China that start out saying, "Hello, dearest one." And also, it looks like Expat Wisdom's been getting raided by, get this, other expat sites that are stealing my content. And you know, it burns me up when other people take credit for my expat Eddie stories. And it burns him up too now that he's kind of infamous, you know? Anyway, all that along with the spam seems to be killing our servers. Plus, we really want to share the info with you guys and gals out there who we know are really serious about it. So that said, from now on, we're going to need to password protect the shows on the expatwisdom.com site. So just go there and sign up on the homepage and we'll send you an email immediately and give you a password. All 100% free, of course. I know it's one more step and all that, but we got to clear out the Ruskies and the Chinese and the alphabet agency guys and the spammers, etc. And those Nigerian and Chinese guys who think my first name is darling or honey or dearest loved one. God, I've been called a lot of things, but never dearest loved one. You know, I just got to cut those morons off or the website will grind to a halt. So, if you want access to my shows a couple days early, again, just sign up on the homepage of expatwisdom.com and we'll send you an email immediately after we upload it with the password. Okay, we got that settled, right? All right, let's get on with the show, my dearest loved ones. Now, a couple of shows ago, I was talking about Latin American loan sharks, wasn't I? Never did finish that. I mentioned that when you're in any big Latin American food and produce market, whether you know it or not, there'll always be a loan shark or two who's set up shop and doing business nearby in a sort of clandestine kind of way. So that day when I was kind of standing back and watching the loan shark doing his thing, I managed to ask one of the indigenous ladies who had set up shop about 30 feet away, who'd been there for ages selling her own stuff, toothpaste and razor blades and pirate CDs and plastic pans, etc. Anyway, she told me the average amount a person will borrow is between 5 and 20 bucks. At an interest rate of 1% a day, a slick 30% a month, or 365% a year. Not bad. Mega returns if you can get them. Now, since she's been around a long time, selling in the market some 20 years, she said she's seen a lot of loan sharks come and go, and this particular guy, she says, only loans out for 30 days max. Then, at the end of 30 days, of course, you can spin it again and pay the VIG, which will be 30% of what you borrowed in the first place, then you'll get another 30 days. Now, from the looks of it, it seems he only extends credit to women. After all, I saw for myself a dozen or so ladies in the line and not one guy. When I asked the lady why no men, she said most men who borrow money just go to the cantina and start drinking. She said if she had a prestamos business, prestamos meaning loan in English, she wouldn't lend to men either. And she said that with a straight face while she was looking directly at a guy in her booth that I'm pretty sure was her husband. And he just flashed me a crooked smile and gave me a mouthful of very badly done gold teeth, which I'm sure his wife paid for. Now, I mentioned earlier that indigenous people like their gold teeth. These are not gangsters. These are common, hard-working class people who happen to like gold teeth. Now, remember, down here in Latin America, the gold tooth fad has been around a couple of hundred years. Nope, the trend was not invented by guys like Coolio and Snoop Dogg. Now, note, we're talking about the poor and lower middle classes here. Then she told me something that didn't surprise me. She said, if a guy walks up and tries to get a loan, more often than not, he'll get turned down, or the loan shark will up the vig and charge him a percent and a half a day, or 2%. So, as you might figure, they go behind the guy's back and get their wife or girlfriend or some lady whose arm they twisted to take the loan out for them, at the usual rate for ladies, which is 1% a day. Now, don't think the loan shark is unaware of what's happening. He'll make that loan to the lady even though he knows it's for her deadbeat guy. Because he knows no matter what, she'll get the money, she'll work double time, she'll work her ass off. And that's the way the cookie crumbles in the cash short, poor, and lower middle classes. And believe it or not, a lot of the ladies that work these stalls and sell stuff in these big markets, they actually sleep there at night. It's kind of their home. The usual setup is they've got a makeshift wooden kiosk set up on one of the side streets or avenues. Most of those avenues way too small for a car to fit through. But that doesn't stop cars from trying. Sometimes they get wedged in for hours. It really is like a bee colony, organized chaos. People hauling produce, etc., in hand trucks and wheelbarrows, on their backs and on their heads, too. Often with a kid or two in tow and a baby and a papoose. So if you're going to shop there, it will be mighty close quarters, and you'll literally be rubbing elbows with dozens of people as well as certain animals like chickens and goats, etc. And you gotta wonder, with thousands of people walking around and hundreds of stalls, and plenty of live animals too, the $60,000 question is, where do these people relieve themselves? Well, I know where the animals and most low-class guys do it. Anywhere, and your nose will verify that. And the ladies? Well, I just don't know. They seem to keep that a well-guarded secret. Although, every once in a while as you're walking, you'll see a sign that says, public bathrooms. There'll be a lady standing at the door, and you'll have to hand her something like a dime, and she'll give you about a foot and a half of toilet paper if you're lucky. Then you're in. But believe me, you don't want to go in that place unless it's an absolute emergency. I won't paint any pictures for you, okay? Now, I've often wondered, with so few of these public bathrooms, and, you know, they're not really public if you have to pay a dime, right? And with all those thousands of people in and out of that market, why is there almost never a line at one of those restrooms? Well, I think it's because it costs a dime or so, and most of the people in the market are scratching out an existence, living on the edge, and really need to save every nickel. I mean, peso. So again, you might ask, where does everyone do their duty? Well, that's the $60,000 question now, isn't it? Oh, and another thing, if you're in one of these big markets, occasionally you'll see a sign that says, duchas y tinas, which means showers and baths. And there'll be another door and another lady collecting maybe 10 or 20 cents, and you could go have yourself a nice shower or a bath. Did I say nice? Sorry, it just slipped out. It's another something you never want to do, believe me. Now, I'd never use one. Though I did sneak a peek once. They're about 10 times as scruffy as one of those military camp showers that they set up in the field. You know, like in a MASH unit, where you pull the rope and a bucket of water comes down over your head. Which wouldn't be so bad if you had privacy and clean water, but there's no guarantee of either. But I digress as usual. So, anyway, when you go to one of these big markets, they've got all these people set up in their little kiosks. Hundreds of them. And there's a main drag with hundreds of people mulling through, along with terribly beat up cars and overloaded, rusted out pickup trucks and the occasional chicken bus, too. Picture a very overpopulated state fair carnival midway on steroids. That's kind of what it's like. Now, like I said, people are set up in their own little makeshift kiosks. Most of the people, as it turns out, have assigned spots and have been there for years. Yes, they do pay rent on those spots too. Each spot being no bigger than your average carnival shooting gallery, you know, where you win the Cupid doll. And you know, a great many of these kiosks have an upstairs. That's the house. That's the sleeping quarters of the owner. What's the rent, you might ask? Well, I understand it's between 20 and 40 bucks a month for a small kiosk like that, depending on the location in the market. Now, who you actually pay is some guy that comes around once a month, and who actually owns that entire market space, who collects the rent, nobody seems to know. Some say it's government property. Other people say it's owned by a corrupt politician. Same thing. Others say it's owned by some wealthy family. But the people who work, rent, and live there really don't care. All they care is that a guy comes around once a month and collects the rent. And that, by the way, is where the loan shark comes in handy. That's their biggest day by far all month. You could call it a Latin version of a payday loan. Now, just imagine a gigantic, low-class market like that where gringos fear to tread. And I'm serious. I go to those places once in a while, and I never see gringos. Why? Because they're basically afraid. They think with all those lower middle class and poor people, they'll stand out like sore thumbs, and they do, and thus get targeted for some kind of scam or ripoff, which they won't. Because, like I said in a past show a long time ago, these markets are self-policing. In fact, I've been told there's almost zero crime in markets like that because it's a place where everybody's just trying to squeak out a living and there's zero tolerance for bad guys and no good nicks. Now, that isn't to say you can walk from your nice gated community down to one of these places because you're going to go through some pretty bad neighborhoods to get there. That's just the way it is. The big markets like that are always located in the armpit of town. And I wouldn't drive my car, even if it's a nondescript one, and park it on the street near one of those markets either. Not because of car theft or the fact that someone might bust your window and steal something. But the fact is, anywhere near that market, there are so many people. When you come back, there could, after a couple hours, be people actually selling oranges and produce from the hood of your car. I've had that happen to me. It just might become someone's fruit stand. So then how do you get there? Well, you drive, of course. You certainly don't want to take a chicken bus. There are always a number of safe, secure parking lots in or around the market. And they charge between 50 cents and a buck an hour, and nothing's going to happen to your car in there. That's not to say the guys on either side of you won't give you an occasional door ding, or when you come back, there won't be two or three people leaning on your car. That you just have to put up with. This is Latin America. And why it's always good to have an average, nondescript car that's at least a couple of years old. Now note, I've been in a number of these parking lots around some of these big markets, and occasionally you see a big-ass SUV with blacked-out windows, a late model too. And you wonder, is that a narco or something? What's that doing there? And you soon find out. As it turns out, since all food, vegetables, and produce are at least half price at one of these big markets compared to the local supermarket chains and the Walmarts and the Costcos that are everywhere down here now. Anyway, oftentimes, when a formerly high-end Latin family is hitting the skids and they want to keep up appearances, even though they're loaned out and stretched to the limit too, they still have to have that SUV and the bodyguards and all that. So what they do to save dough, and I've seen this, is occasionally come to the big, massive, chaotic market, park that SUV in one of those lots, and send out the bodyguard or the cleaning lady with a list to buy stuff in the market for half price. Meanwhile, the pretentious jerk lady of the house, usually the mother, will be sitting in that car behind dark sunglasses and she'll never get out. Because it would be just way too embarrassing if anybody who counted ever saw her walking through the market. Can't let that happen. But she'll go there incognito. She'll open the door and let the cleaning lady out to do the shopping. So, bottom line, when you see a decked out late model SUV in one of these parking lots, and believe me, I see them almost every time I'm in there, it's some hoity-toity rich guy or gal who's suddenly down on their luck. Now, in a parking lot that holds maybe 50 cars, you might see one or two. But because the windows are blacked out, you'll just never know which one of those highfalutin pretentious families has hit the skids. And from what I hear, when you're an upper-class family on the skids, you can keep up appearances for a long time. One, by shopping at the big chaotic market, clandestinely, of course. Two, by being very tardy in paying your help, sometimes for weeks and months. And three, by hitting up your friends and relatives for personal loans. In fact, over the years, some supposedly upscale individuals with exclusive last names have tried to hit me up for a loan here and there. But I like to think I'm not that stupid. In fact, I asked one guy who kept pestering me, why don't you just go to the bank and get a loan? And he said, because they won't loan it to me. My credit's bad. And I said, so then I'm supposed to lend you the money when the bank's already told you you're a crappy risk? Sorry, but that doesn't compute. Then he said he'd give me his Harley as collateral. But later I found out he couldn't do that because he was paying it on payments and he was behind on that too. Figures, huh? Anyway, back to those great big chaotic central markets. Now, I have to say, from an expat's point of view, the beauty in all this is that it's a completely cash business and no one's paying taxes on anything. There's no sales tax, no VAT, no receipts. You just whip out your dough and pay. No credit cards, no checks. And note, they only take the local funny money. So if you're in Honduras, they're taking lempiras, Guatemala, quetzales. And when in Salvador, the local funny money is called the U.S. dollar, by the way. So anyway, as far as the loan sharking business down here in Latin America, a friend I was with, a local Latin lawyer, told me that some of these loan sharks in these big markets have $100,000 cash with them at all times. In the local funny money, of course. And obviously, even since rip-off credit card companies don't get 365% interest a year, at least I don't think they do, the little off-the-books loan shark guys in this business are cleaning up, tax-free too. Judging anyway by the line that never seems to diminish in front of this guy's little cash window. So you might think then, is it worth it for a gringo to get into this business? Well, I'd say yes. But I think if you do it, you do it as sort of a pawn shop. But I'd never crowd these guys. I'd never set up on their territory. I'd go to some other part of town. And I think it really would be a good business. That is, loan shark / pawn shop. Since your typical U.S.-style pawn shop just doesn't exist down here. And since in Latin America, there really are no rules per se about lending money and no limits on what kind of interest you could charge, etc., I'm sure if you opened a pawn shop / lending business, you don't charge 1% a day. You charge half of what everyone else is charging and you'll still make a ton of money. Now, of course, if you have a pawn shop business anywhere, you got to have a couple of strong-arm guys in a very solidly built place. Bulletproof service window, reinforced concrete and metal walls and all that. Not a problem. Down here, that stuff's extremely cheap. But note, if you want a business like that, you'll definitely have to learn how to speak Spanish, at least a 7 out of 10. And by the way, if you're interested, there are actually websites and books that you can get off the internet that tell you exactly how to set up a pawn shop, turnkey. In fact, I've got such a volume myself because at one time I was thinking about it. And then you might ask, why didn't I do it? Well, that's because I discovered you have to be married to a business like that. In other words, you have to be there all the time. Or at least check in once a day. If you don't, you'll soon enough lose control of things, that's for sure. And another thing, you'll probably have to set up in a kind of a ratty part of town, because those are the kind of people that go to pawn shops, right? Now, I like to travel, so I'm not into being married to such a place. But some people, especially expats with a lot of time on their hands, and there's plenty of those, they need to have a place like that to go to every day. Otherwise, they'll spend half their life channel surfing or swinging in a hammock sucking down beers. I know. To some of you folks up in Cleveland, that sounds like the good life, doesn't it? Anyway, know this. People who have bars and restaurants and mom and pop, bed and breakfast, etc., they know about being married to a business. And it's not for everyone, that's for sure. So if you want to come down here and you're stumped for business ideas, a pawn shop could be just the thing. I can tell you that even in a small town of 10,000 or more, a pawn shop could really clean up. It's a niche market that no one's filled yet. And the downside again is you'll have to be there all the time. And that's true whether it's in the first or the third world. And by the way, it's a cash business now, isn't it? Hint, hint. Good idea, you say, but what about inventory? Well, you do have to start collecting stuff before you open, right? And here's how. Just go to a couple of local Latin rummage sales and buy them out cheap, and that will be a good start, and soon enough you'll be in business. Now note, in any city newspaper down here, they have yard sales and garage sales. Now, they don't advertise them like that because the term's not really translatable into Spanish. So you just go into the miscellaneous area of the classifieds and you see when people put down big lists of things for sale. For example, sofas and beds and TVs and tools and just loads of stuff. Then you know it's your basic garage sale. By the way, I'm a sucker for those things, especially here in Latin America. I'm always thinking I'm going to come across that Superman Action #1 comic book that's worth a couple hundred grand. Way back when, they shipped all kinds of stuff like that down here, so there are thousands of ultra-valuable things scattered around down here. You just have to find them. And the Latin folks, they have no idea. Anyway, if you're looking for antiques or you want to stock a pawn shop, occasionally you'll just see a bunch of junk piled up in a yard or a few flyers pasted on a telephone pole, and that too is how they advertise these things. Now, more than once I've come across a flyer on a telephone pole, and I went to one of these yard sales and I came across some very cool stuff. One guy had a two-car garage that was an entire tool shed. I mean, this guy had anything and everything that had to do with fixing cars and machines, etc. And when I walked in the place, the only gringo I think the guy's ever spoken to in his whole life, surely the only gringo at his rummy sale, the first thing he said to me was, "Give me an offer and you can have it all." Now, that was the moment I could have stocked my very own pawn shop completely. That said, if you go to one of these rummager yard sales and you see a lot of very cool, good stuff, give them a price on everything. In fact, I'm sure the guy with all those tools would have taken $500 for the works. I'm sure I could have sold that stuff online for at least $5,000. Now, don't forget, you don't have to have a pawn shop stocked with all kinds of junk. Because, you know, that stuff does get people in the doors, but the real moneymaker is the gold and silver and jewelry trade. That's how first world pawn shops make most of their dough. And remember, I mentioned in a previous show too that down here in Latin America, there are many, many items that first world people would consider antiques. And down here, well, every grandma and grandpa has a room full of them. And it's just old dusty junk furniture to them. They'd much rather go to Walmart or Costco and buy that crap furniture that comes from China. I'm not kidding. Why? Because it's brand spanking new and not great grandma's old junk. Nope. Doesn't matter that it's plastic, press board, glue, and paint. It's brand spanking new and modern, even if it's only going to look that way for a couple of months. So don't forget the antique angle. That could be really big. So then, how can you lose? You're making money four different ways if you open a pawn shop or a facsimile thereof. You're pawning, you're lending money, you're in the junk gold and jewelry business, and you're picking up the odd rare antique here and there. So then, how do you know what that stuff's really worth when it walks through the door? Or if you stumble across something interesting at a yard sale? Obviously, since most of the people bringing that stuff in won't even have an internet connection, nor will most people who are having yard sales in middle and lower middle class neighborhoods. And believe me, that's where you find the best stuff. Anyway, they have no idea what that stuff's worth. Not that you or I would either. And you know, even if the locals had a computer hookup or a smartphone, they wouldn't have the faintest idea where to check it out. The fact is, 99.9% of Latins who are on the internet every day are experts at two things: Facebook and Twitter. That's it. Oh, and I forgot, I've been hearing about this thing called WhatsApp down here lately too. Sound familiar? And here's the stats on that. As of January 2015, depending on the Latin country, only 15 to 20% of Latin families have a 24/7 internet connection at home. Now, as far as smartphones, meaning phones hooked to the internet, oh yeah, they're all over the place down here too. And you could get the real cheap ones for as little as $25 or $30. So then the average Latin guy or gal might have one of those, probably does. But the cost to surf away on those things with abandon is not within the reach of the average guy down here making $300 or $400 a month. So what 95% of people with smartphones do is just send tons of text messages and hook up to, you guessed it, Facebook and Twitter when the finances permit. Meaning, the average person with a smartphone down here does very little real surfing on the internet. Only the Latins that can afford a phone with a contract, about 15% of the population, do any kind of real surfing on that cell phone. But as for you, you can get on your smartphone or jump on your computer and get on an antique site or Craigslist or Amazon or whatever and get a pretty good idea in 5 minutes or less what certain items at rummage sales are worth, as well as the oddball antique that walks through your door. So then, how do you sell that stuff? Well, the stuff you can't sell locally, and I'm sure you're not going to sell those antiques locally, it's an international market you're looking for. Either post that stuff on antique websites or Craigslist, etc., and naturally Amazon, or better yet, make your own website and put up your stuff for sale. Because I guarantee you no one down here is doing that. Anyway, there's a one-of-a-kind business idea with a very low startup cost. I think maybe with a 10 grand investment, you could get it off to a really good start. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning all this is because I get emails all the time from people asking me what I think would be a good startup business here in Latin America. That is, something small and manageable for expat gonna-bes and wannabes with an inexpensive startup cost, let's say 5, 10, or 15 grand. Now, the best way, of course, is to get your boots on the ground. And a real good start is to sign on to one of my expat wisdom seminars. So, if you're interested in an early bird deal on the seminar I'm probably giving in July, email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, or johnny@expatwisdom.com. Again, once you get boots on the ground, that's when ideas really start percolating. When you're down here and you see for yourself how you can do things better than the locals are doing them, or perhaps you just find a cool niche and fill it. Anyway, I want to close out now by giving you a little news from Robert in Europe. On occasion, you may have received some emails from him from our Expat Wisdom website. Just to let you know, he and his Expat Wisdom team in Europe, yes, there's an Expat Wisdom team both here in Latin America, that's my thing, and the Expat Wisdom team in Europe, that's Robert's thing. Anyway, he and his Expat Wisdom team in Europe are meeting in Barcelona, Spain, early in May for a little fun, to catch up, hang out, and generally enjoy all the coolness of Barcelona. Then he thought, why not invite some of the Expat File listeners too? Now, if you remember, I've been talking about possibly doing an Expat Wisdom tour in Europe for some time now. I never got around to it. But now, this looks like it just might be the perfect window for Robert to organize one. And if there's any bad news, it's that it's limited to just 7 people. Kind of crazy, huh? There's a reason for it, but you'll have to hear it from Robert himself. So if you're interested, you'd better get an email off to those guys as soon as possible. Just send one to info@expatwisdom.com and they'll get you all those details immediately. The cool thing is that Robert's been doing business in Spain for 10 years now. And he knows all the ins and outs, the good, the bad, the ugly, the great. And with economies and real estate crashing left and right over there. I understand from him there's some tremendous deals to be had. Lots of desperate sellers. So it's info@expatwisdom.com. By the way, I promised Robert I'd show up too and even maybe bring expat Eddie along.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old